Case of Rawlinson versus Law Office of William Rudo Francis.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I am Ernest Francis on behalf of the appellant, Geraldine Rawlinson. Unfortunately, what we have here is a situation in which a debt collector has pursued members of a debtor's family through a baseless lawsuit when the debt collector was unsuccessful in recovering from the debtor directly. I would note that the case is now in a little bit of an unusual posture because the grounds upon which Judge Massetti decided the case were essentially standing grounds, and he held that only a debtor or a person with interest in the collateral that allegedly secures the debt can be a plaintiff under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. In our opening brief, we noted or argued that this was wrong under the party aggrieved test for standing, which has been applied universally outside this circuit and indeed by two courts in the circuit. As I read the appellant's brief, the appellant is not at this point trying to defend the holding of Judge Massetti in that regard. It apparently concedes that the party aggrieved test in fact does apply and that a non-debtor can be a party aggrieved and therefore a plaintiff under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Having said that, I note that the appellee has raised a couple of arguments which would appear to bring us to the same place as Judge Massetti, namely that my client was not a party to the transaction and did not incur the debt. It's our contention that that would be irrelevant under the under Section 1692 KA 15 U.S.C.,
I use a KA because KA doesn't do anything. It just basically says a person aggrieved, and that still has to be defined by the Act. I thought subsection D is your 1692 small d is your best section, which extends the Act not only to the consumer but to any person who has been the object of harassment in collection of a debt.
Yes,
and it seems to me, I suppose, that if you have a debtor who's being pursued by a collection agency, and the agency goes to the debtor's employer, and goes to the debtor's family, and goes to the debtor's friends, and starts harassing them in order to bring pressure on the debtor, it may be that the Act gives a cause of action to those, the employer, the family, and the friends.
Yes, that's our contention that it does. And that is another reason for holding or for finding that the appellant's arguments as to not being a part of the transaction and not incurring the debt are not a basis.
Is that a correct reading of the statute? Does the statute protect people outside of the transaction?
Yes, it does. That's our contention. And it's supported by the language of the statute that Your Honor has cited.
1692 small d.
Small d. And also, but also by 1692 KA as well. So I think.
What's KA? It just says a party agreed to get damages, right?
Well, it says.
Any person.
And with respect to any person, yes.
Yeah.
So, how close was the damage claim in the Republican to the actual debt? My calculation had it very close. And they're contending that they were seeking damages and not seeking to recover a debt.
Your Honor, I can't. I tried to figure that out, and I can't. They submitted a statement of particulars with their complaint in the Prince George's County District Court, and they had some figures in there for the amount of the debt and the interest on the debt. I can't match those with the $20,100 that they were seeking as damages in the complaint in the Prince George's County District Court action.
They want to get the car back and the damages, right?
They wanted to get the car back and the
damages. So that you would, I guess that you would, that would be the fair market value of the car at this time plus $20,000 equals, I guess, is that what they're saying?
No, I can't figure out how they got to that $20,100. They want the car back, and then the point which they made in what I think is their principal argument at this point is that the a replevin action is essentially a tort action. And their
Levin's a repossessory action. It basically says, I have a right to possession and I want it. If you lend the lawnmower to a neighbor and the neighbor fails to return it, you can bring a replevin action.
That's correct.
The argument I think that you have to be making, and I thought that's what you were making, is the fact that they brought a replevin action against Geraldine Rawlinson with zero information that she had possession of the vehicle was an harassing type of action in furtherance of the collection of a debt, and that they had no basis for bringing her in as a party. She had to defend herself. She was subject to service. She had an attorney and this type of thing.
That's correct.
And that's the nature of it. It's they're entitled to bring a replevin action if she had possession of it and collecting their debt, but they conceded that the only information they had was that he was living with the aunt,
right,
and nothing else.
That does not give them any basis to pursue a replevin action
against the aunt,
and that's who the plaintiff is here. I would note that what the debtors,
whether that's harassing enough, is a question of fact, I suppose.
It's a question of fact and statutory construction, and Judge Massetti said he was not getting into that because...
Well, that's right, and I don't think it's appropriate time. That we're under, a 12B6?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. All right.
What the debt collector is arguing at this point, or is trying to do, is to use 13th and 14th century classifications for the replevin action to defeat the language of a late 20th century statute. We contend that a replevin action by a secured lender is an effort to collect a debt. And I would note,
I don't even see how that's in dispute. That's why they were trying to get
won that argument.
Okay, but that's
go forward.
That's their principal argument.
Well, let's let them make that argument if they wish to make it. But I can't see if they're trying to collect get the collateral back that supports a debt. That's the collection of the debt. It's like a foreclosure. It's like self-help under the Uniform Commercial Code or whatever means you do to get the collateral back. And they used a replevin action to get it back. It seems to me that's in an effort to collect the debt, isn't it? They weren't doing it because they liked the car or had been loaned to somebody and not returned. It's the fact is that they were trying, that the debt was owed and was in default and they wanted the Mercedes back.
Yeah,
pretty fancy car, I guess.
And I think the court has just made the argument that I was going to be making. I would note that we contend that the case is governed by Wilson versus Draper and Goldberg. They have argued that there was no demand for payment as there was in Wilson. However, in the...
if the debt collector harasses the employer of the debtor and keeps calling the employer and saying, we want them to pay the debt, we want them to pay the debt, and the employer says, get off our back, don't call us again. And then they continue to call. You suggested that 1692D gives the employer a cause of action.
That's correct, yes.
But there's nothing to do with the employer having to pay the debt, or the employer being owing the debt or having a demand for the debt. The employer isn't the debtor. The employer was being harassed in connection with the collection of a debt.
And
it seems to me... And I'll ask your colleague this, but it seems to me that the statute may reach that under 1692D.
I think...
And K, I guess, is what you want to put in K. That's okay.
The court has made the arguments that I made. I'm going to sit down. I don't know whether I can reserve the balance of my time, but I've concluded what I needed to say. Thank you.
Mr. Cantor.
Good morning. May it please the court. Ronald Cantor from Rockville, Maryland. I'm representing in this case the Rudeau Law Group. It's a law firm out of Baltimore. Bill Rudeau, its principal, has been a Maryland practicing attorney for 25 years. Now, I'm asking on behalf of my client that you affirm the judgment of the district court that a third party sued for replevin based on alleged possession of secured collateral has no cause of action under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. I think the best
way... Let's start with the Act.
Yes.
Just to get a few ground rules here.
Absolutely.
Do you think 1692D authorizes a person harassed, not the debtor, but a person harassed in connection with a collection of a debt to sue the collection agency?
A person harassed in connection with the collection of a debt. Yes, I mean, that's what the Act says. I can't dispute that.
So that person doesn't have to be a debtor, doesn't have to owe the money. And if you harass the employer, you harass the family, you harass the friends of the debtor, all in an effort to bring the debtor pressure, or pressure on the debtor to pay, and embarrass him, and do whatever else you think would be. In that circumstance, the people harassed could come in and bring a suit.
Yes, the point that I am trying to make, and of course I've already heard what's going on, so I know where I'm at.
I'm just getting you into count three.
Sure, I understand that.
There are a lot of counts that you, it sounds to me like you have some pretty good points, but the count three alleges that you filed a replevin action without any evidence to support the action, and it alleges that that was harassing to Mrs. Geraldine Rawlinson.
I understand that.
Okay, now, you don't think that's a cause of action under 1392D?
Well, no, and for these reasons. First of all, the complaint itself alleges that my client attempted to collect a debt from Ms. Rawlinson, that is, attempted to collect her debt. And I think that's clearly not the case.
In count three it says that?
Well, no, I think it's in the introductory. If you bear with me for just a moment.
Obviously, she didn't know the debt.
And there's also, there's other counts in there.
Was she sued in the replevin action?
She was sued in the replevin action.
Well, you could understand why she might be upset.
She doesn't have just count three.
She has a debtor may not use any false, deceptive, or misleading representation or means in connection with the collection of any debt. There are a bunch of provisions that are defined to, they're limited to actions by the consumer. But there are a bunch of other provisions which are not limited to actions by the consumer.
I know that, but I want you to take into account this overarching principle. It's a strict liability statute. So that at least when you're talking about E, you're talking about a false statement. It doesn't have to be with Sienter. And one of the claims here, I think it's in count 13, is that my client violated the act by writing to Ms. Rawlinson and saying, I'm not attempting to collect a debt. And other...
He's not, and the reason was because he was filing a replevin.
11, correct.
But that's just totally off the wall.
Well,
Listen. The guy buys a Mercedes.
Right.
He spends $20,000 or incurs a $20,000 debt. He fails to pay the debt, and so the agency goes in to get the car back in order to satisfy the debt. Now, one of the steps in doing that is getting the car back. There's a lot of ways you can do on it. One might be a replevin. Now, why isn't that collecting a debt?
And I'm going to answer that, and in the sense that it is the statute itself was designed in its intent was to prevent collection agencies and later lawyers, because my client's a lawyer, they filed suit, from deceptive, unfair collection practices in connection with the collection of a debt. Now, I heard what you said about the fact that one of the ways of collecting a debt is through a replevin, but...
It's not one of the ways. It's just part of it.
Part of it.
It's like foreclosure. You gotta get the property to sell it and satisfy the debt. The deed of trust is not at the debt. Deed of trust is a lien on the property, and you foreclose and get the property, then sell it. And, of course, our Wilson case puts that within and here you're replevening the action. Now, the act of replevin is nothing wrong with that. Their argument is the act of replevin against Rawlinson, who was the aunt, and owned the house where he lived, somehow should be the defendant in a replevin action. And then your client's letter doesn't help a bit. Your client's letter says, well, I saw she was living at the mother's house and the grandmother's house, and then she moved over to the aunt's house. So he says, therefore, I sued the aunt.
Okay.
Now, he can come and say, that's pretty harassing to me. I'm not the debtor. I'm the aunt. I'm not the debtor. I just happened to let him live here for a while, and you're suing me in court. I have to get an attorney to pick up the car.
Well, you're looking at the facts, and I want to discuss the principle.
Well, I know, but I'm looking at the record.
I know. You're looking at the record. I understand. And I want to address the question of, and I think it's undecided in this circuit, as to whether if Replevin's suit against a third party is subject to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act in the first instance.
If that suit is harassing, because the statute prohibits harassment, it doesn't prohibit suits.
Well, understood, except that's only one provision of the statute.
That's the one he's alleging a violation of, harassment.
But the
if he has a cause of action under any one of these, we reverse, right?
That's the way it goes. But I understand that, but I want to point out that, you know, to the extent that the complaint alleges a violation, for example, of 1692G. Now, 1692G requires a notice be given to the consumer.
Right. There are a bunch of them that require the consumer, but there are a bunch that don't.
Oh, I agree.
How about focusing on the don't focus on the consumer?
Well, I'm focused
on the other ones. He doesn't have some causes of action.
Agreed. Okay, I understand where you're coming from. I've got to go back to my client and explain this. Of course, he can listen to the recording. But seriously, I don't. As I read the statute, as I read the intent of the statute, it is a strict liability statute. A collector errs. A collector makes a false statement, regardless of scienter, regardless of intent.
Intended to reduce the harsh collection activities, including misrepresentations,
correct,
harassment, all kinds of different things, loan sharking type
oppression,
practices.
Abuse
yeah, sure,
in collecting a debt. In other words, if somebody owes a debt and says, I owe the debt, I don't have the money, sue me, that should end it. You don't keep calling him. You don't keep coming to his house at dinner time and saying, when are you going to collect the debt, and calling the employer and calling their friends. That's what they wanted to get rid of.
Agreed.
And so they want a commercial transaction to remain a commercial transaction and not the harassment part and the misdeception and all the other things. That has a broad array of conduct. Some of it is conduct aimed at the debtor, and some of it's at conduct aimed at people around the debtor.
I understand that. I'm not. I can't.
Okay. Well, the question is, I don't see what the puzzlement is. That's the.
The puzzlement is that it's in my view, and I may not win on this point.
No, I'll hear.
But in my view, The intent of the law when it was first enacted was to regulate third-party debt collectors who harassed individuals about paying debts. What we have here, in my view, is something pretty far afield. That is a law firm that's hired by a creditor.
Well, hold it. Let's get rid of that issue. The law firm's a debt collector.
Yes, right? I concede. I'm just trying to.
It's designed to reach law firms for
yes,
sure. We know that.
I well know that. Okay.
Yeah.
I know that. That's not in dispute.
So what it's designed for may be exactly as you say, but then the question is, how does it carry out the design? And the question is, does it protect people who are in the scope of these debt collection activities when those people are not the debtor themselves?
It begs the question of whether a Replevin action, and I know what you're going to say, but it begs the question of whether Replevin action is in fact at conduct in connection with the collection of the debt. I would suggest this.
Let me ask you, why isn't it?
Well, for one reason, if you get... As I recall, and I'm going back in history, and of course, Mr. Francis talked about the 13th, 14th. I'm going to try, if you let me.
Yeah.
Although I don't. Okay, if you when I learned this in law school, the original mechanism by which someone purchased chattels on credit was the title would remain vested in the vendor, and then upon completion of, it used to be called a conditional sales contract, I think, upon completion of the payments, title would then be transferred to the purchaser. And where I'm getting at is this. Of course, it's changed now because title is in the purchaser, even though the vendor or the seller retains the right to recover that property. So if the vendor, the seller, desires, they can simply take that vehicle and retain it in satisfaction of what was owed. They don't.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So where I'm getting at is I'm trying to, and I know that it may not be ultimately successful, but I'm trying the best that I can to articulate a distinction between the nature of the collection of a debt, meaning calling people up and harassing them or harassing their employers and saying, you have to pay this
and
money.
What? And what?
And
between that and what?
And the act of recovering possession of that chattel, which historically was still titled in the name of the seller.
So you can harass with respect to that, to recovering the chattel.
Why
but you can't harass. Is that? I just want to be sure I understand what
you're arguing. I'm trying.
I know, so I'm asking you. Okay. Is that your argument, that you can harass and you can do whatever it is with respect to a replevin of a chattel, but you can't do that with respect to a debt?
Give me a moment, please. Within the confines of this statutory construction,
right.
Yes, because, you know, Judge Massetti.
No. Okay. I'm giving you the chance to answer the question, but don't go tell me about Judge Massetti. Just tell me, is that within the confines, you think this statute doesn't forbid you from doing harassment or whatever else in relation to a replevin action? Is that right?
Yes, it is. I have to say that if I want Judge Massetti's decision affirmed on appeal.
Okay, well, let's just leave that.
Okay.
Put that to the side for a moment. Because didn't you request also money damages here?
Yes.
So even if you were right with respect to the replevin action, we're still asking also for money damages. And so then wouldn't the statute come into effect?
I don't think so for this reason.
Why? Okay.
And this is the money damages for replevin are in the nature of a tort remedy. That is for the wrongful detention of the property. So that if a third person has this chattel, has this vehicle, and they're using it and they decide to set it on fire, then there would be damages to the chattel that would be recoverable separate from what would be owed on the property. And
is that the situation here?
No, I'm not saying it was, but I'm trying to answer your question in terms of the...
But because we have the situation here, we don't have any fire damages in lieu of the property. We have the property, and we have damages. And
right.
You say, oh, well, property, recovery of property isn't covered by this statute. Recovery of money damages sure is, right?
The money damages have to be in connection with the transaction incurred by the debtor. You see, I understand what you're saying, but
when you filed a replevin action, your client, what was the purpose?
To get back the vehicle.
Why?
Because they couldn't find it. They couldn't get a hold of it. I think that's pretty clear from the record.
And they would sell it to reduce the debt, right?
Well, customarily, of course. Absolutely. I mean, I can't argue with that. I think that the prayer for damage...
You argue because the replevin action alleges that explicitly.
Well, of course. And... I
so
think
the replevin action is one step in the finance company, in this case, is collection efforts against Mr. Moore. The
yes,
one step is to get the car back.
I agree with that.
Okay, now why isn't that the collection of a debt?
Because the action was taken against a person allegedly in possession of collateral. There wasn't a demand.
But that doesn't mean they weren't trying to collect the debt. When they filed that action to get the car back, let's say it was in the aunt.
Let's say it wasn't, I'm
let's
sorry.
Let's say it was in the aunt's possession.
Right.
She had been loaned it indefinitely by him, so they wanted it back. They filed it against her. That would be an effort to collect the debt. Even though she didn't owe the money, the effort was to get the car back, the collateral for the loan.
And that's where, obviously, you know, I have to differ in the sense that the effort is to get...
I don't understand what you're saying. What are they doing in replevining the car?
They're getting back their collateral that secured the debt. I mean, that's clear.
And that's what we held in Wilson with respect to
foreclosure. Right. I don't see how you get out of Wilson. I mean, I think that maybe you have an argument there. Maybe we were wrong in Wilson, but Wilson is circuit.
I can't say. I mean, I can say that, but I'm not going to get anywhere if I do.
Exactly.
And I think that Wilson, again, the distinction I make in Wilson is twofold. First of all, it was an action against the consumer. And I know what you're going to tell me about D. So... I mean,
it's not like we're making it up here.
No, I know. And I know.
I don't understand why you want to make arguments or don't make arguments based on what we're going to say. You either have an argument to make or you don't. And you have to assert what you're trying to make.
Okay.
You're trying to figure out where your argument is, I must say.
Okay.
Judge Massetti was given a narrow issue, which probably didn't fully present the issue under the Act. That's unfortunately. one of the questions is, can a third person? No one really addressed that before. And can a third person who's not the debtor bring a claim under the Act? Now, every circuit court has said yes, and so does the Act on its face say yes.
Okay.
But he seemed to think that because Rawlinson didn't owe the debt, therefore this action can't lie against her under the Debt Collection Act.
My argument is that the statute was intended to regulate the collection of consumer debts, that where a creditor hires an attorney debt collector, not to collect the debt against the third party, but to recover the collateral securing the debt, that, I guess that conduct is not within the purview of the intent of the Act, that there was no demand for payment of the debt made upon Ms. Rawlinson, contrary to Wilson versus Draper and Goldberg, where there were letters demanding payment. This was simply an in rem action seeking to recover from Ms. Rawlinson the property. And as Judge Massetti indicated in his opinion, this not deprived Ms. Rawlinson of other claims she may have that would be recognized under state law, for example, malicious prosecution or torts of that nature. But when we're dealing with a strict liability statute, and the strict liability components include those sections that apply to the non-debtor, such as E. When we're dealing with a strict liability statute, I don't believe that it's what Congress intended, that the reach of this statute be so far or go so far as to regulate the conduct of a debt collection attorney filing a lawsuit against a person allegedly in possession of collateral. And I think the best analogy or the best illustration I can give that supports my position is the thief analogy that was made, or the thief argument that was made before Judge Massetti by appellant, and it's repeated here on page 20.
You want to know something?
If yes.
You harassed the thief, he stole the car and you harassed the thief, and he brought an action under 1692D, there'd be a question, wouldn't there? There'd have to be some kind of defense that because he had stolen the vehicle, that he couldn't bring the action. But he still is a person harassed in connection with the collection of a debt.
That would not be a defense, though.
I don't know.
That wouldn't be a defense.
It's not an absurdity because the notion is that the Congress didn't limit it to thieves and non-thieves. Congress said any person harassed or abused or whatever the verbs are they used. And I don't know how we get around the statute.
What was the amount owed on the debt?
According to the record, it was a little less than $26,000 on the vehicle. I'm going to sum up by simply saying I tried to respond to the question in the sense that, you know, I believe there should be a limit to the statute in the sense that this was not an
effort. Well, your argument, if I understand it, is that debt collection does not include the restoring of collateral, bringing back to the creditor of collateral. Your argument has to be the debt collection is seeking the money itself as opposed to the collateral for the money.
Only as it pertains to a third party who is in possession of the collateral. That's my argument. It has to be in light of this court's precedent. And I'm not going to argue that you were wrong.
Third party, you mean the non-debtor?
Non-debtor.
Well, correct. Here Moore had the car.
Pardon me?
Moore had possession of the car.
I think so.
And the suit was filed against Moore. And the only reason Rawlinson was named is she isn't alleged to have possession of it. She is alleged, but without any basis.
Well, Ms. Rawlinson's brought the suit. I thank Your Honor. Unless you have any other questions, my time is up. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Francis?
I have two brief points that I would like to make. The first is that the appellee's counsel just referred to state civil law remedies. I looked at abuse of process, and it is so narrow under Maryland law that it would not have been available here. Secondly,
it really wouldn't make any difference whether you – lots of times in the law you have alternative remedies.
That's correct. The second thing is I think that my client may be considered a consumer under the sections that refer to a consumer as opposed to any person. The reason I make that argument is that the damages in a replevin action, I would submit, overlap substantially what's already due under the debt. For instance, there would be...
I'm not sure about the damages and collecting damages to the collateral is the collection of a debt. And I think Mr. Cantor has a pretty good point. He made this in his brief, and I know you've argued against that. But when the collateral is damaged and the bank brings a cause of action against the person having possession of the collateral for damage, I'm not sure that's a collection of a debt. It could be for protecting a debt. It could be protecting the collateral or restoring the collateral. But I do believe this action, this replevin action, was on its face, said he owed the money and that they were replevining the car to repossess it in furtherance of collecting that debt, just as a foreclosure collects a debt. It seems to me that the replevin action itself falls within the collection of a debt. Now, if it doesn't, that's his argument, I guess. And that may be the best argument he can make, and maybe he's got something to it. Are there some cases that say that pursuing the collateral on a debt is not the collection of a debt?
None that I'm aware of. When I made the point about damages a moment ago, what I was talking about were putting aside the issue of damages to the vehicle.
Turning your person into... getting her under other provisions of this statute as a consumer. That's
yes.
What you were trying to do. But I don't know why you care about that. If you have one cause of action.
If we win on one, as Your Honor pointed out.
How is she a consumer?
That's what he was trying to
do. What's your argument?
Because one of the elements, there would be two elements of damages which I submit overlap with the debt. The first is interest. Because assuming they got the vehicle prior to the replevin action and sold it on day one, they brought the replevin action and sold it on day 30, their damages would be interest on the amount of that they realized through the sale for that 30-day period. But interest is already what's provided under the consumer debt. The second type of damages would be recovery costs, and again, those would already be provided under the secured debt that Mr. Moore would have entered. But the point...
How is consumer defined in the statute?
Consumer is defined as any person who owes or allegedly owes a debt under 1692A5.
And what's the theory that Ms. Rawlinson owns a debt?
Well, the theory is that the damages that they would be recovering for detention, and again, we don't have a situation where there's malicious destruction here, but we have a situation where the damages...
Is there a suggestion that Ms. Rawlinson is owed the damages? I mean, they sued two defendants.
That's correct.
And they alleged a lot of conduct, most of which is applicable to Moore. But they only need one act attributable to Ms. Rawlinson. If she did possess the vehicle, that cause of action would be appropriate.
Yes.
And she may not be liable for the damages because she may not have caused them. It may have been Moore that caused them.
Correct. But what the damages they were asking for in the complaint, at least as far as interest and recovery costs, again, I would submit would overlap those in under the debt obligation, and therefore that request for damages would be an attempt.
That's pretty attenuated. That's pretty clever action. I don't know if that works.
It's the argument I'm making.
Okay.
And that concludes my remarks.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll come down and greet counsel from both sides. We're going to come down and greet you.
Yeah.
And then we'll go on to the next.